Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. I think I'm going to start off today's program with a little snippet from the jacket of Steph Jagger's new book. I hope it's Jagger and not Jager, but we'll clear that up in just a second. Steph wrote, "Steph Jagger lost her mother before she lost her, stricken with an incurable disease that slowly erases all sense of self. Steph's mother struggles to remember her favorite drink, her favorite song, and perhaps most heartbreaking of all, Steph herself. As the woman who loves her and raised her begins to slip away, Steph makes a promise to write her mother's story before it's entirely lost." On today's edition of Line One, author Steph Jagger joins us to talk about her new book, Everything Left to Remember, My Mother, Our Memories, and A Journey Through the Rocky Mountains. Welcome to the program, Steph. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Well, I'm so honored and excited and happy to be here.
Yeah, is it Jagger or Jagger?
It is Jagger, like Mick Jagger.
I like Mick, okay.
And actually, you know, you were real, real close. Most people say Jager, actually, like Jägermeister, the German version. But it is a little more rock star than that.
Well, I have a little touch of dyslexia, so I just read things the way they're supposed to sound. And
there
don't put a Y where there's a J. All right. I need to take just a second to remind people that we do value listener participation. So if you have a question for Steph or a comment about today's topic, there are three ways to connect with us. If you're in the Anchorage area, our phone number is 907-550-8433. If you are listening outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email us your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. We'll do our best to get your questions and comments on the air. So, all right, I guess let's start off, I guess, with just you giving us a little background on you, what you're doing these days, and how you came to this point in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. This point in my life is a point where I get to split time doing two different things, which I love to do. One is to write. And so we're going to talk, I think, a fair bit about that today. I have two books out. This is my second, Everything Left to Remember. Both are memoir. I really love exploring our own stories, our own personal narratives. And that leads into the second thing I do, which is and have been doing for well over a decade, which is coaching and mentorship, working with folks who are moving through various different life transitions and initiations, swimming through their own stories and, you know, parsing them apart. So it's a nice split. Sometimes I get really focused on the navel gazing of my own life, and sometimes I get to dive in with other people in a different way. And I think part of the way that I ended up with, you know, moving forward with Everything Left to Remember was, I didn't think I was going to write this book. But when my mom was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's in 2015, about 10 months later, we went on a road trip together. And it was very clear to me, like the day we were flying home from Montana, that this was something I needed to write. And I didn't even know what that was yet. But it seemed like the words were already kind of coming through the fingertips onto my app on my iPhone. So, it's been a wild journey, but, here we are.
Yeah. So you didn't go out there with the idea, that you would write a book about this, but it seems like the things that came up for you and this evolution of like, and we'll get into more of the details as we move along, but at the start, I was like, so where is this really going? I didn't really understand what you were going to learn about yourself. And that was really powerful as it shifted to that arena. So we'll get into that. But so I guess that kind of answered my second question was, like, what sort of called you to write the book? If you went out there without doing it, why was it important? Why did it feel like that mattered?
You know, I've been for close to 15 years now a person who is really driven by and pays a lot of attention to what I would call intuitive calling, like the gut feeling, the knock on the door, the exactly what, you know, what you said, what called you to write this book. And I think when I'm letting go of my mental self enough, like what I think I should be doing, the way I think my professional life or my personal life should be going, and those kind of mental body narratives, if I can let go of those, I tend to have access to a larger sense of direction for myself. And it was exactly that. I mean, I felt the trip itself was a calling. I had just come back from Montana from a ski trip, and you know, bags were in the front hall, and I took a shower and got hit with this idea, like, you're supposed to go back. And I just, you know, followed it from there. And when it came to actually writing about the trip itself, that exactly what I said earlier. I mean, I was on the plane, my mom was coloring beside me, and I was just reflecting on the trip, and I intuitively kind of picked up my phone and started just jotting notes down. And you know, by the time we landed, I mean, there must have been 3,000 words written. And I thought,
Yeah. So it just kind of poured out. It kind of poured out.
I know what that means. So much of what I do and really have done, you know, since I was in my late 20s, has been driven less by a intellectual bucket list of things that I would like to accomplish in my life, and much more by a sense of intuitive calling, like, where is the world nudging me to move next?
All right, I guess let's kind of go back to the beginning and talk a little bit about, like, I mean, obviously your relationship with your mother is very close. I don't know if it is she still with us?
Yeah,
Okay.
she is. She is in she is now in late stage Alzheimer's,
Yeah.
and so there is both very little of her left and still quite a bit of her left, if that makes any sense. And she's in a care home in British Columbia in Canada, and seems fairly content there, actually. And when we did the trip together, you know, she was 68 years old, very fit, very healthy, and in the very early stages of Alzheimer's. So, like, kind of a dramatically different person, really, than she is now.
Yeah, so many of those stories took me back to being 18, 19 years old, and my grandfather started his journey. And, you know, my grandmother died when I was 16. And then we started to notice that she had been covering for him a lot, like, and nobody had spoken about it. And you talked a lot about the secrecy and the silence around that pain and loss and how important it was to get to that. But the same sort of experiences that I cared for him for an entire summer. After my senior year of high school, and I would bathe him and follow him around the neighborhoods, you know, as he went on his walks to work with his hat and his briefcase, and he had to go to a meeting, and then we'd navigate back home, and he would have forgotten about it. But it was really, really powerful being with him in that time, and in his silence. And then he progressed and, you know, was 11, 12 years. So the reason I asked that is because your book kind of wraps up in COVID, and there's no evidence whether, you know, how she's doing now. So
What she's doing now. Yeah, and I actually, you know, I think this is a really important, is one of the reasons, I think, looking back, that there was a calling to write this. Because most of us, when we hear about various different types of dementia, including Alzheimer's, are really envisioning a much older person, a person maybe in their late 80s or 90s, who is typically in late stage Alzheimer's. That's a vision that is kind of consistent for a lot of people who maybe haven't been impacted by the disease. Those of us who have had proximity to the disease, I think, have a clear understanding that, number one, this can impact people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, in the early
Yeah.
onset years. And so this could look much younger, and the person could be, you know, quite physically capable, like my mother, you know, was. And additionally, you know, there is, it's a long progression. And so the first handful of years of a person showing signs, the first handful of years after a diagnosis, there is usually still a lot of that person left that they can be engaged in the community, and they can attend, you know, my mom attended fitness classes at the community center, you know, for a very long time, and can do things like the trip that we did. That does require that the people around them and the person themselves kind of walk with a degree of kind of conscious grieving. Like, if we don't want to look at what's happening, we might miss a 1 to 2 year window of opportunity to really have this person still connected, engaged, and kind of knit into the fabric of the community. If we are in kind of unconscious despair about it and don't want to look at it, and there might be shame and there might be hiding it, and there might be, we don't want to tell other people yet, which is it, everyone has their own individual journey. But I think there's a limitation to that window of availability. So it really, looking back, feels important to me that there is an image, because of this book, of someone who is in early stages of early onset Alzheimer's.
Right. There's many points in the book where you would have to, you know, the rafting guide, or, you know, you'd have to explain, well, she's not going to remember any of all the safety lessons you just gave her. Right. And having to explain it, because she didn't look like she had it. She was, like you said, young and strong, and people, but it sounds like people really rallied and responded when you talked to them about it. And that's one of the really neat things about the book, and that message of just opening up and embracing that and not trying to hide it. I think that's important, and we'll get to that in a minute, but I just do a little reconnect with, for anybody who's been is just joining us, author Steph Jagger is joining us today to discuss her new book, Everything Left to Remember. It's a beautifully written story of connection, discovery, and the lessons Steph learned through the loss and the experiences that her mother was going through with early onset Alzheimer's. So if you have a question for Steph or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. Our Anchorage number is 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can call us toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. Let's go back to the beginning and talk a little bit about your experiences growing up with your mother and your family, and what that was like, and how that sort of shaped, I guess, your adulthood. And then we'll talk more about how that shifted through this trip with your mother. But what was it like growing up with her?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like I am one of the lucky ones, in that, you know, my family, had a lot of consistency, a lot of, physical, mental safety. My mother and my father, you know, were demonstratively warm people, and there was a lot of love in our household. And that provided me with, you know, to be quite frank, from like a mental health standpoint, you know, a really regulated nervous system. And that is a privilege to have as something that's passed down, you know? There were other parts of life, the emotional body, as an example, that I felt were quite often like swept under the rug, that there were things that weren't talked about. There were emotions that we didn't know quite how to express. There were topics that were taboo, etc. I think that's a pretty common experience. And so there was, again, a lot of love, a lot of consistency, a lot of safety built into the way that I grew up. And I also felt like there was a doorway or multiple doorways into my mother that I didn't have access to, primarily through the emotional body. And I think what that led to was a sense as a young one that there was an internal freedom that maybe even she didn't have access to, that when I looked to the men in my life and the men in my community, it seemed like they had. And so as a young person, I kind of looked and was like, well, if I'm going to make a choice about which avenue I want to do and which people I want to emulate, it's the men. It seems like there's more power, more freedom, more flexibility in the lives of them than there are in my mother and in the lives of the women around me. And so as a young person, I really, you know, this is unconscious. This is not a conscious thing that happens. But looking back, I kind of see, oh, you know, I began to value men and masculinity in a much bigger way than I did women and femininity. And I think, you know, that's really the entry point into the book. It you know, starts with my therapist telling me, you know, you think you're bigger than your mother.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know what that meant at the time. But my body did, you know, my body reacted that it was true. And I think the journey became a breakdown of that. Like, what are all of the ways that I've made her and that I've made women and that I've made feminine energy small and not valuable? Hmm. And what are all the ways that I've been taught, you know, to do that? And so really, I think what I discovered through that was then, you know, yes, I would have liked access to those doorways to my mother's interiority, but really what I want access to is the doorways into my own interiority.
Right. And that's really the essence of this journey. You mentioned early that you didn't go set out with the idea to write the book. And so I guess I'd like to know, what were the expectations? Was it just like, oh, I got to take one more trip with my mom before, you know, before, while she still remembers stuff and can have fun? Or, I mean, what were the expectations and your hopes going into the trip with your mom?
Yeah. Well, one of them, it goes back to what I said earlier, like the intuitive calling to do the trip. Like, I just heard you're supposed to go back to Yellowstone. You're supposed to go to that area. You're supposed to go with your mother. And so for me, there's kind of like such a trust in that now that there's like, okay, no questions asked. Like, great, I'll go. And then I start to get curious about like, huh, like, I wonder what is going to play out here. Now, at the time, before I really thought about writing the book, It really became, you know, how do I meet my mother where she's at? How do I engage in the present moment? How do I enjoy, you know, the mother nature that is around us? I think now, you know, from the viewpoint I have, I think I was really looking for a container that was vast enough to hold us inside of the grief and the challenge and the excruciation of this path we were beginning to walk down, which is Alzheimer's and dementia. And, you know, I think looking back, the only mother, you know, bigger than my own seems to be Mother Nature. And I think, you know, I love knowing that I'm talking to you and folks from Alaska, because I think this is something that you all know. You know, there is a reflection, there is a power, there is a bigness, there is a lot inside of our relationship with the land and with the nature around us. And I think I needed somebody, something, some energy, some place, some land to kind of hold us as we move through this. And I think that was the expectation, like, who can hold us now? And I think the answer was, you know, the mountains, the rivers, the bison, the lakes, the hiking trails, you know, the moose. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful imagery in the book, and it's really well written, and I consumed it in, you know, just you know, over the course of 2 days, but I think it was about 4 hours of actual reading. I just blazed through it, so it's an easy read. Yeah. And it's beautifully written with lots of imagery and great stories and great moments. So let's I think we have time to do this before our first break, but let's talk a little bit about Alzheimer's. And, you know, there's lots of people. I remember growing up and just being terrified of this gift of my genetic coding, because it's all over my family, and my mm-hmm. grandfather had it. And I remember thinking when I was, you know, 19, 20 years old, thinking, well, that's a, you know, 50 years before, I'm sure they'll have a cure for it or some way to stop it. And as time progresses and I get into my 50s, middle 50s, now bordering on late 50s, I'm thinking it's not that far away. And so it's scary. And you talked about that. And what does Alzheimer's bring up for people and families who struggle with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, especially I have a similar, you know, my grandmother had a pretty classic old age dementia. And then my mother, of course, had early onset. And so, you know, they presented in different ways, but it is distinctly inside of particularly the women in my family. I think the only way for me, I mean, I don't know if this is helpful for others, but you know, this is a disease that really removes a lot of the past, right? The memories are gone. And it also, if it is going to happen to me, it will also remove some of my future. You know, my ability to engage with nieces and nephews, right. My ability to have flourishing relationships, et cetera. And so if that's going to be the case, if it's something that's already affected the ability to move into the past and have memories and potentially in the future, there's just kind of like a defiant refusal in me for it to take the present moment, for me to spend time worrying, consumed by, constantly thinking about, engaged 24/7 in what are all the things I can do? What are all the diets I can go on? What's all the exercise? Not to say that I don't engage in those things in a healthy way. I do. But if I allow it to consume me with mental chatter, with anxiety, with worry, et cetera, it's also taking the present.
Mm-hmm.
And that just everything about Alzheimer's and dementia has really taught me that the connection happens in the present moment. Like my only ability to connect with my mom now is if I am very present with her where she's at. And so there's been a really great teacher there. And I think that's the one thing I hold on to is, okay, it might take the past, it might take the future, but I have right now. And if I sink into right now, even if that's mundane, like washing the dishes in the kitchen sink, like that's okay. I can feel the warm water. I can feel how lovely the soap feels on my hands. I can enjoy the now.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is after the ecstasy, the laundry, right? And that's talking,
exactly.
they are just things to do. And if you can sit in that moment and be present, and that's what you describe so well in this book is those moments of connection with your mother that were then gone, you know, the next moment. So, all right, we are past our first break. So for those of you who might be joining us late, author Steph Jagger is joining us today to discuss her new book, Everything Left to Remember. It's a really well-written story about her journey and her mother's journey through early onset Alzheimer's. I have an email and a phone call that we'll get to right after this break. So just remember, we do value listener participation. If you have a comment or a question for Steph, you can reach us in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. Or toll free anywhere outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is at our email, line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return for more of our conversation with Steph Jagger. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've got Medicaid, make sure Medicaid has got you too by keeping your contact information up to date. Visit medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov to use the new online form to quickly update your contact information without waiting. A current mailing address, phone number, and email address is needed to avoid delays in healthcare coverage. Plan to stay covered by visiting medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov for information and resources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in today, author Steph Jagger is joining us today to discuss her new book, Everything Left to Remember. It's a story about her trip through the Rockies with her mother, who was in early stages of early onset Alzheimer's. So it's if you have any family members who are going through this, or if you're just sort of entering this journey, it's a good read, and it's worth definitely worth picking up. All right. If you have questions or comments for us, you can call us in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. We have our a caller, Kristen in Anchor Point, is calling in. You have a question for Steph?
Yes, I was wondering, first of all, when your mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, did she contemplate suicide? I'm kind of wondering about the suicide rate of people. I mean, you're in your 40s, and they've just handed you pretty much something that's not only going to kill you in the end, but it's going to turn you into a vegetable before you die, where you don't recognize anybody, and you can't remember things, and, yeah, pretty much just takes your mental humanity away from you, while your emotional and physical humanity stays with you, but the other part of you that makes you truly human is just flows away like water out of a leaky bucket. So I'm wondering if she's ever had to handle any of that with her mother, when her mother could still contemplate such things, or has she come in contact with it when she's studying other people's engaging in this as well? I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call, Kristen. And I think, you know, that's a heavy question, and it speaks really to the heart of the fear that this diagnosis has for people. And I think it's right up Steph's alley, this question.
Yeah. I've got a multitude of different answers. And I think, you know, the first one is a more direct answer of I don't know. I don't know if that's what she contemplated. You know, as I said before in the interview, there was much of my mother's internal emotional landscape that I really didn't have access to. And that stayed true through the early stages of the kind of diagnosis. Like, she wasn't openly talking about her fears around what might happen if it was true that she did have Alzheimer's. And when she found out she did, you know, what would happen from there? And so there's one way of saying, you know, I'm not sure if that's what she contemplated. Another thing that I'll add is, you know, I don't know what the suicide rates or suicidal ideation is inside of folks who have just received a diagnosis, but that's a brilliant question. And I think at the heart of it is a real kind of, how do we support as community members, as family members, first and foremost, you know, the mental health of a person who has received a diagnosis like this, or really, you know, any other degenerative disease. And how do we honor, you know, the ways in which they might want to live out the rest of their lives? So that's just one thing that I'll kind of say as a bit of an awareness. I think the second thing, you know, this has been a really big learning for me. And it's, you know, as I've walked through what I hope to be kind of a conscious grieving process, as opposed to unconscious despair, is this conscious grieving process simultaneously is attempting to be as present as possible with my mom. And inside of that presence, yes, her mental self, her brain, the functioning of her brain, which impacts a lot of a person's personality and humanity and what we think of them as being in the world, is impacted and does decline. In the moments that I've been able to be present with my mom, especially in the last handful of years, like in later stages of Alzheimer's, it is that two things are abundantly clear to me. Number one, the spiritual and energetic body, say, part, essence of her is there and is well alive. I can see it in a twinkle of her eye, even if it's quite a blank stare. But I have to be willing to hold quite an uncomfortable gaze for a while to see that. So I think there is still a lot of her still there. The other part of this is, and you know, maybe there's researchers who have better answers, you know, scientific people, researchers, medical professionals who have better answer to this. But I've come to a place where I could make a lot of assumptions about what having the disease in late stages would look like and feel like. I could make a really, it would be really easy for me to make an assumption that living that way is absolutely miserable. And I don't know that.
Right.
Like, I don't know what she's experiencing. She may be experiencing energetic bliss. I don't know how time works for her. I don't know how language works for her. I do know that she's able to pick up on warm voices and calm energy, and that shifts the way she sits in her chair. And that is also a huge part of human connection. It's not just our brains and our ability to say, hey, what do you think about this? And hey, I think this about this. Or do you remember the hot dogs that Dad burnt in 1972 on the flaming barbecue? Or do you remember the slip and slide that he injured his ankle on? You know, that's one way of human connection. Another part of human connection is being able to sit in the same room as someone and just feel their presence. And that is still vibrantly alive with my mom. So it's a really, really long way of saying, I don't know if that's, if she what she contemplated or was fearful of in her own life. But as I've sat with a contemplation of if that were to happen with me, well, I just don't know enough about the experience to say whether it's a good one or a bad one or an awful one or excruciating. We don't know.
Right. All the fear is generated by our view of it, by our what that must be like, and the lack of dignity that we assume is happening. There's like two stories from my grandfather's journey that really have always stood out for me. And one is when his dear friends that he was in China teaching with, like, you know, 40 years earlier, came to visit him, and we told them. He doesn't know who anybody is. He doesn't remember. And when they walked in, he just lit up. He'd been sitting in a chair, kind of like just sort of drooling and not really speaking. Yeah. He lit up, and for an hour, he talked to these people about China and about their times. And it was like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, that was in the deep recesses somewhere, and they triggered something that unleashed it. And it was powerful for us to realize, wow, he's in there. And the other one was at his death, when he was essentially a skeleton and hadn't known anybody for years. And my father was in the hospital and crawled into bed with him, and sort of put his head on his shoulder and started weeping. And nothing had happened for my grandfather in hours. And, you know, he hadn't known anybody for years, and he just reached up and patted my dad's shoulder. That kind of stuff, that what you said.
Absolutely.
We don't know.
I've had similar experiences with my mom in that way, and you know, additionally, I have a friend who works in care home facilities, and I was having a conversation with him about this, and he said, you know, Steph, it's so hard because the family members are really lasered in on the loss, that this person is not who they know their parent to be, their uncle to be, their brother to be, et cetera. He said, but it's really interesting because the people who work in the care home, like, they meet them as Bob or Susan or Sheila, in my mom's case, who comes into the care home, and they meet them as the person they are then. And he said, they're funny, they're grumpy, they're happy, they have a sense of humor, they light up about the balloons being thrown around, and they, you know, engage in the dancing thing. Like, we know them as that. And do families have, and friends and people who are close to these folks, have an ability to meet and re-meet and re-meet this changing person?
Wow. Yeah.
And that's not an easy thing to do. You know, it's easy to say, but it was really profound when he talked to me about that we're really lasered in on the loss. And if we could open up and, you know, grieve the loss, feel the loss, at the same time as meeting this human where they're at. And there's a lot of aliveness and connection available in those places.
Yeah, we're so stuck on who they were. And we miss the playfulness and that childlike sort of joy that returned to my grandfather, just the giggling and the funny moments. We miss that if we're stuck in this is not them, because it is them.
Yeah.
All right. I do have an email I want to read, and then I want to get more into like the lessons that you've taken from this. But the email says, I appreciate you writing about this topic. My family and I are at the beginning of this journey. She asked, what are some of the first things that you noticed before your mom was diagnosed?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, first of all, I will say to this person and anybody else who is listening who feels they're at the beginning or knows they're at the beginning, I'm so sorry. And the only way I think we can move through these kind of excruciating paths is to know that we're not alone on them. And so these stories and accessing different communities, accessing different organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, which has chapters, you know, all over the country, and engaging with the community is really, really helpful. So that's just one thing that I'll offer and I'll say. What were some of the things that I noticed? You know, there were certain things that I saw in my mom that were very simple, like just a loss of words, like an inability to pull up a particular word. Now, that's also a really, really common common thing that happens for women in their 40s and 50s and 60s in perimenopause. So those are sometimes hard to pull apart. And I think there were some other things that were a little bit more of an alert for me, which were kind of, for my mom, it was a loss of filter. So there would be an occasion where she would say something that would be that I'd be shocked by, not necessarily because of what she'd said or the content of what she said, but because she was the one who said it. And I remember one time she was driving me somewhere and I asked her a question. Her response, I didn't anticipate that being her response. And she dropped me off and I was visiting a friend. I got out of the car and I started to say to my friend, oh my gosh, I can't believe my mother just said this, you know, and partway through saying it, I stopped and it was almost like I could see like a click, 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 all these things. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's not my mother. Something's not right. So that was a big one for me. There's lots of people that have different things that show up. But the inability to pull up words, she developed a few kind of cover-up techniques, a few common phrases like, oh, I thought so, yeah. Or that's what I thought, like that I noticed she was using more and more, as well as that kind of lack of filter for her particularly. There's another one I know is common for people that is subtle, but depth perception sometimes for folks with Alzheimer's and dementia begins to shift. Sometimes that happens later stages, but those were the initial ones for me, like, wait a second, that's not something she would normally say. And, once those started to kind of compile and add up, it became really, really clear to me that something was going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one of the first things, is just this lack of like things that make sense. And I remember my grandfather wanted to go and drive his new car around the perimeter of Atlanta on 285. And he wanted to drive circles around that because he wanted to get to the checkup where they tuned it up so he would get better mileage, right? Uh-huh. Like that, all of us were like, what? And he would just go and circle the perimeter until he got to the mileage. He could still drive, but none of us understood like how that made any sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the use of profanity from a man who is a Baptist minister and I never heard him say a crossword to anybody, but he started getting angry and he would drop some profanity here and there and we'd all be like, what was that?
Right. Yeah. So similar, like that lack of filter, like, yeah. Wait a second, they yeah. wouldn't normally say that. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, that's, yeah. Thank you for the email, Katie. And, I, my heart goes out to you. It is it's a long journey and it's tough, but, as Steph, you know, I would recommend this book because it really does sort of hone in on the importance of living in that moment and so many good experiences and moments that you had on, or that Steph had with her mother on that trip that were, you know, as I said, just gone for her mother, but Steph clearly carried them and you know, sharing those things with us. So thank you for that email. So we are at our 40-minute break. When we come back, we will get back into the book and talk about some of the things that I really want to know. If you're just joining us today, my guest is author Steph Jagger, and she's discussing her new book, Everything Left to Remember, My Mother, Our Memories, and a Journey Through the Rocky Mountains. Really great book, especially for anybody who's starting this journey. After a short break, I'll let you know how to reach us with your questions and comments, and we'll continue our conversation with Steph Jagger. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've got Medicaid, make sure Medicaid has got you too by keeping your contact information up to date. Visit medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov to use the new online form to quickly update your contact information without waiting. A current mailing address, phone number, and email address is needed to avoid delays in healthcare coverage. Plan to stay covered by visiting medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov for information and resources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in today, author Steph Jagger is joining us to discuss her new book, Everything Left to Remember. If you have a question for Steph or a comment about today's topic, please give us a call or send us an email. And you might want to do that. I get a lot of calls and emails at, 10:55, and then it's too late to get you on. So if you want to get on the air, please do so in the next 5 to 10 minutes, and we will get your question answered. Our phone numbers are in Anchorage is 907-550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. I think there was a couple of things. One was the idea of femininity. There's two sort of themes that I picked up on in this book, and you kind of touched on that a little bit. But the other one is anger. And you talked a lot about being angry in this book, and there was a moment in the book where that anger kind of was dropped and shifted. So can you talk a little bit about that and what that was like for you, what that anger was about, and then what it moved to?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was moving through the trip with her, there was an initial kind of building frustration, that often happens, I think, with our loved ones with Alzheimer's. But I think underneath that was a deeper root of, oh, I'm not going to get access to this internal emotional landscape of my mother's ever now. And there's grief about that, and there was anger about that, because I felt that that also meant that the doorways to those places in myself like would be closed. And there was a real simmering anger, and there was also anger just about, some of the modeling that I saw, inside of my immediate family growing up, inside of the society, a greater than less than equation of men and women. And, I think much of what happened on that trip gave me something I think is very, very important for all of us to have, which is context. It made me, my aunt, for example, came down and joined us, my mom's younger sister, and provided me some context about what, some of the things that had happened earlier in my mother's life. And it really made me think, like, right, my mother was born in 1947, raised by a woman who was born in 1921. She was growing up and inside of her own, maiden voyage and, declaring her own identity in the world in a time where women weren't allowed to hold credit cards under their own name without a permission of a husband. This is a wildly different time than when I grew up. And so, of course, my mom would be worried about me going out into the world. Of course, my mom would be, you know, there would be a limitation to what it was that she could show me. And I think what really ended up shifting was, number one, kind of like a right placing of the anger. Like, is it her that I'm angry at? Or is it the society in general that's created the circumstances that she felt she had to keep a lot of that secret or to herself or not accessible? And I think where I landed was the latter. And it really, really opened up kind of a vision of my mom of how big, you know, going back to that question that the therapist asked me, you think you're bigger than your mother,
right?
And kind of realizing, oh my gosh, she's the one who's been really huge the whole way along. Like the strength it would take to move through the era and to you know, the time that she grew up and the things that happened to her in that time, as opposed to, you know, the freedoms and possibilities as a woman that I have now. You know, is our job done when it comes to equality? I don't think so. But, you know, it really, really showed me a different side of things. So, you know, I think mostly it was that really sitting back and thinking about the context of her life and how that really helped to explain a lot of the things that had happened inside of the relationship with the two of us.
Well, one of the things that really jumped out about that piece about your aunt's visit to that campsite and your mother was coloring all the time.
Yeah.
She just colored and colored and colored. And you thought, I've never ever seen my mother color or draw or paint. That was one of the things. But then your aunt told another story about when your mom was 18, 19, I think.
Yes.
That really sort of brought that into context.
Absolutely. So that is so true. So when my mom was first diagnosed, she adopted the adult coloring books. I mean, she it was prolific. She just spent all day coloring. And I'd never seen that before. I'd just never seen her color, never seen her paint, never seen her, you know, engage in that kind of artistic streak. And you're right, when my aunt was there, and I won't give away certain details in case people are going to read the book, but when my aunt was there, you know, she told a story about watching my mom when she was about 18 years old after something, you know, fairly big, fairly life-changing and traumatic had happened. And she said, oh, she spent the whole year doing paint by numbers. Hmm. And I just, it just really landed for me that there's something that has happened early on in my mother's life that she had a strategy of dealing with, which was to become very quiet and to pick up her paint by numbers and to kind of forget about it, like never speak about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Here she is moving through another really large life transition, initiation, moving from, you know, the stages that she was at into like kind of eldership and going back to those same tools. And, I remember that happening on the trip, and it just felt like part of me just fell to the trail floor as we were walking. And that actually, it's interesting that you bring this piece up, because that was the first thing that I wrote. That was the first thing that I wrote about when I got on the plane. I just started to write about the coloring, and, that was really for me the entryway into the story, actually.
Well, that hit me like a brick, because I thought, wow, she is coping with this new loss, with this new thing that she can't tolerate or is very fearful and difficult, and she's just coloring. I'm glad I didn't give it away. I almost did, and then but yeah, it's worth reading. It's worth reading the book. All right, we got a caller I want to get to. Harlow, you're on line one with Steph Jagger. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me. And Steph, I really enjoy the interview, and I can't wait to read the book. My mother's probably in the middle of, you know, we're all in the middle of the journey. And something that you said was really profound to me, just about not making assumptions about what they are going through. And, and my mother, when, you know, before Alzheimer's, she was a very in control person that liked to plan out every moment of her day. And I know early on in her, probably pre-diagnosis, it really bothered her when she couldn't remember things. And I think it really caused a lot of frustration and embarrassment for her. And so I kind of went along this assumption that as the disease progressed, that it was really bringing her to a dark place, maybe. And I was in at the Alzheimer's clinic with her, and she did a depression screening where, you know, went through a series of questions, this kind of standard 20-question cognitive depression test. And lo and behold, we came out of that with, you know, what I learned is that she's actually was pretty happy. And she ended up in this place where, you know, maybe it's they forget that they have Alzheimer's, maybe. I don't know if that's a good way of describing it, but what you said there really resonated for me. It made me feel much better about where my mother personally was on her journey. And granted, it's, it certainly hasn't been easy, but, you know, it made me realize she's not just stuck in this really dark place of dread about losing her memory, and that she's actually, for the most part, a pretty buoyant personality in the stage of Alzheimer's she's at.
That's a great, great call, Harlow. And I think it adds to what Steph was talking about the assumptions, and we don't know what's happening in there.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's another thing that I'll add. First of all, again, also, like, thank you, Harlow. And I'm wishing you and your family and your mother well as you continue to travel on this journey. And, you know, that it reminds me of another thing that people ask quite a lot is, like, in a genuine way, like, why go on this journey if she was going to forget? Like, if she wasn't going to remember it, why take her? And I think this is something really important for us to understand about like human nature and actually about our felt sense and our nervous system is, even if we don't have a cognitive memory, if we can't pull up the names and the places of a joyous occasion, if we were in it, if we were experiencing the joyous occasion, we feel that in our bodies. And if we spend day after day after day after day feeling pretty good things in our bodies, even if we can't name them, that is going to make a big impact. That's going to have a big impact on our vitality, on our aliveness, on our energy, on our long-term health, perhaps outside of our cognition. And for me, that's worth it. And it goes to one of those points of, like, can I meet my mother where she's at? Because if I can't, if where she's at is that she doesn't remember my name, and I spend the visit with her quizzing her on my name and saying, telling her she's wrong, right. No, my name's not Susan, what is my name? That doesn't feel very good for her. She might not remember the experience later that afternoon, but her body will have felt confusion, her body will have felt frustration, and her body will have felt negativity. And so that's a really big thing for me. And I don't know whether that's, like, a tip for people who are engaging with folks who have Alzheimer's, but, and even just a tip for our own lives. Like, is it enough for us to do things, even if we don't remember it, is it enough for us to go into the world and feel good things? And I feel like the answer is a resounding yes on a multitude of different levels for me. And that was, you know, again, kind of looking back, one of those things that I was like, oh, I provided her with, you know, 2 weeks of fun and excitement and laughter and love, and boy, oh boy, is that ever enough.
What a precious gift. Thank you, Harlow. Appreciate the call, and we're feeling it. I think anybody who's going through it feels your struggle, and we appreciate what you're doing and the insights that you shared with us.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, Stephanie. I can't wait to read the book. And yeah, I really appreciate the show today.
All right. I got about an hour's worth of more questions, but we are not going to get to that. Harlow's call brought up a memory of me, like, sitting and trying to toilet my grandfather, and him saying to me, "I sure am glad you're here, because that other guy's pretty grumpy." And he didn't know who I was. Like, he didn't know that he was talking about my dad, And it was just, I was like, wow, that's a moment. Like, he was happy that I was there.
Yeah.
So it's those, yeah, those little moments. All right. So we are rapidly running out of time, and I do want to read a quick email just that sort of connects this. My mother was diagnosed with dementia 8 years ago. She was prescribed medication to help with cognitive impairment. She was also a lifelong epileptic, so I was accustomed to her needing medications. Therefore, I was not prepared for what the diagnosis actually meant. My mom was going to die from this. I was very unprepared for this outcome. I naively thought it would just be another thing that she would live with. Unfortunately, she succumbed to it last summer. My journey with her was always surprising and perplexing because of my naivety. I remember thinking, I've got this, not realizing that, in fact, I did not have it at all. My advice to anyone who has a loved one with this diagnosis: to get yourself as much information on this disease as you can in order to best deal with what is happening to you, both to both you and your loved one. It is not just about the loved one, right, Steph? It's about the whole family, the whole community of people who are mourning that and loving that.
Absolutely. I love this comment so much, because to me, naivety can really flip in two different, like, vastly different directions. Naivety can slide pretty easily into denial. It can also go the other way and slide pretty easily into curiosity. And I think that's a beautiful, you know, beautiful awareness that the person who wrote in just used. And I do think, you know, this is a disease that certainly impacts the person who has it. That's undeniable. And it is a huge, huge impact on the proximal people, you know, the husband, the wife, the, yeah, children, the primary kind of who will become the primary caregivers. And I think that's something, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, how's your mom doing? And I love that question. It's a difficult question to answer. Like, I don't actually know how she's doing in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, the larger question for me is, you know, how's your dad doing? How are you doing? And I think those are important to bring up and bring into awareness as well when we're talking about diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, and really any kind of long-term degenerative disease. You know, there's a lot that the loved ones, you know, take on.
All right, I got to stop you right there, because you have about 45 seconds to answer the biggest question that I had, which was, okay, the scene at Old Faithful and the idea that humans are experiencing a mass forgetting of our essence, our connection to our mother, Mother Earth.
Yeah. Okay. I've got 45 seconds. I will say this. Much of this journey has moved me into a place that is centering what I'll call deep remembrance. Is this about the fact that this person has forgotten my name and the place in which I grew up or where she raised me? Or is this about a deeper remembering of the things that will hold us and the ways in which life will shape us through love and loss? And can we remember how to let life do that, like carve something of us?
Perfect.
And that's the answer.
All right. Thank you so much, Steph. I appreciate your knowledge and wisdom and your journey. It was a pleasure having you today. My thanks to Line One producer, Madeline Rose, and to our engineer, Chris Hyde. For all of us at Line One, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.